Hi guys, as you can see, I am still in a hotel room, but the good news is bags are packed and I'll be departing this room in the next few hours and not going back to a hotel room for quite some time. So I'm getting out of the US later today on my way home. Now, last week when I was also in a hotel room in Seattle, I said I was starting to feel a bit crook, a bit unwell. That didn't work out so well. I did end up getting a full-on cold, which was rather miserable. Kind of lost my voice too, which wasn't great because I had to go to Vegas. I think I was going to Vegas just after I did my update last week. Anyway, I did a keynote in Vegas at the EpiServer Ascend conference on Monday, and it was one of those times I was like, am I actually going to be able to do this? Like, is my voice actually going to hold out? It did, fortunately, and the keynote went pretty well. I don't know how it actually sounded for the folks out there, but I did get through everything and the feedback was very nice. So basically for the last week I've had this cold that I've been trying to shake and just being super cautious on everything that I've done. So I've been in my hotel room early every night. I've been eating salad and drinking heaps and heaps of water and basically doing all the stuff which is good to keep you healthy, but is kind of boring when you go away on trips. So, frankly, I'm a little bit sick of doing that right about now. But I am on the mend, which is good news. I did the EpiServer event. That went very well. Actually, before that, on Sunday, I went out to Red Rock Canyon in Vegas. So one of my Pluralsight mates lives in Vegas, and I said, take me somewhere that isn't glitzy. You know, like somewhere that just isn't slot machines. Incidentally, in Australia, we call them poker machines. I know, it confuses people. Anywho, so we went out to this canyon, had a hike, really nice spot, and just totally different to everything else in Vegas. So that was cool. Anyway, then on Tuesday, I came to San Fran. Got over to here, still feeling a bit miserable. Went and checked in the hotel. On Wednesday, I recorded three Pluralsight courses. And I thought I'd tell you a little bit about what was in those, because they will be coming out hopefully next month. So, and again, I don't know how I'm going to sound on those, but they were definitely recorded. That's kind of the point. So I'll see how that ends up working. Fortunately, most of the speaking was done by the other people in the courses. So those courses, number one was I did a course on the OWASP Top 10 2017 edition with Andrew Vanderstock from OWASP. And this is the guy who's been intimately involved in building out all of the top 10s for the last decade plus. So this was like the person to chat to about the 2017 edition. And I learned a bunch of things that I didn't know about how each of the items in the top 10 ended up where they were. Some of them were going to actually be lower or higher or weren't going to be in there. So I got a bit of good insight into the methodology, and we spoke a lot about that, particularly about things like the new items that are in there. There's things like XXE was not in there before, insecure deserialization was not there before, CSRF is out, other stuff is combined. I thought it was a really interesting chat, and he is just a super smart guy, fellow Aussie too, although lives here in San Fran. So we did that. And then I grabbed another fellow Aussie who also lives here in San Fran, which is Casey Ellis. And Casey Ellis has been a mate of mine for a long time. He is the guy who started Bug Crowd, the bug bounty as a service kind of program. And he has been enormously successful. They just got another round of funding the other day for tens of millions of dollars again. So he's done very well there. So we spoke about bug bounties. And in fact, we did two courses. So we did one course, which is bug bounties for companies. So for example, if you're working in a company and you're thinking, I would really like my company to have a bug bounty, and if you are working in a company, that's what you should be thinking, but you're having trouble selling that to leadership, or the lawyers are worried about someone hacking you if you have a bug bounty. Incidentally, they're trying to hack you whether you have a bug bounty or not. This just gives you a way of actually finding out about it in a responsible way. This is going to be the course, and I was really happy with the way that course went. Casey absolutely knows his stuff better than probably anyone else in the world when it comes to bug bounties, which was also awesome because he did do a heap of talking while I asked questions and sipped on lemon tea. So we did that one, and then we also did one which was bug bounties for researchers. So if you are interested in participating in a bug bounty, what do you need to know? How do you get started? Where do you get educated? What do you have to worry about legally? Does it matter where you are in the world? All these sorts of things. So we put both of those courses in the can on Wednesday. And I have been assured by the folks at Pluralsight that we're looking at about a 4-week turnaround. So I think safe to say we will see it sometime in April. We'll see all three of them sometime in April. So we'll try and push the two bug bounty ones out together on the same day because they're so closely related and we do kind of cross-reference a bit. And I hope the OWASP one goes very quickly too because there's been a lot of demand for people wanting to see new OWASP things. Now, just on the OWASP thing too, I'll write a blog post about it when the course launches, but it's always a little bit funny because in a way, it's much of the same old. You know, like injection is still number one. We still haven't fixed that, unfortunately. There's still a bunch of other stuff beneath the 10. So you don't just sort of do the 10 and go, hey, we're done. So it's sort of much of the same, but then it's the nuances about the changing things. So yeah, for example, one of the points was the landscape is very different in 2017, was in 2017, to what it was in 2013, which is the previous edition, because of things like microservices exposing legacy applications which were previously not facing the web. So now we've got these little services sitting on top pulling data from old things that we didn't expect would be sitting here in a 2018 era of online things. So a lot of the old stuff, some new stuff as well. Anyway, so that was that. We did all that on Wednesday. And then I got to the point where I said, I think I actually need to see a doctor. And I was like, I know the healthcare system in the US is meant to be, what's the right way to put it without upsetting anyone, different to Australia. I wonder how this will go. But I went along to a medical center the hotel recommended. And to be fair, like I wasn't terrible. This was not like, if I was in Australia, I probably would have just gone and sat in the sun. Can't do that here. So I went along and ended up being there for quite a while because this really, what's the right word for it? Kind of eccentric doctor. I was explaining all of these weird things about what happens with your sinuses when you get a cold. And he was actually a little bit hard to understand. I think he might have had, don't know if it was a bit of Hawaiian or Japanese background or something. And then he asked me what I did and I said the cyber things. And of course, somehow my cold became an analogy of like bacteria being offensive actors. And I don't know how that worked. Anyway, he gave me some meds, which I think has helped a bit. So I'm taking multiple meds to try and get over this thing, which I needed because the next 2 days I knew were just going to be absolutely crazy. And I want to talk about those next 2 days, namely Thursday and Friday, where I visited a bunch of tech companies. And the rationale for this was that I was going to be in San Fran on Thursday anyway. I was going to have a day off because of the way the flights are. I didn't really want to get out the same day as the Pluralsight courses. So probably 6 weeks ago, whenever I booked the tickets, I put out a tweet and said, hey, is there anyone like in a tech company in San Fran that wants to catch up and say hello because I've got some time free? And I just got like this flood of interested people from really, really, really interesting places. And I kind of went, wow, these are so many cool places. I'm not going to be able to do it in a day. I should actually stay longer. You know, like let's just extend it for another day. And then I can go and see, you know, all the sort of the ones on the Thursday I was going to, as well as a bunch of others. So I extended it and I ended up extending it 2 days because the tickets are crazy on a Friday afternoon. And let me see. So Thursday, I went and saw Cloudflare first. Now, I talk a lot about Cloudflare. Everyone probably knows this. Because I do love what they do with their product and I talk a lot with those guys online, but of course face-to-face is different. So I spent a bunch of time with Junaid. So he's the guy who came up with the K-anonymity model that Pwned Passwords is using. So we spent a heap of time talking about that, looking at some of the things we can do in the future, talking about some of the people who are using it, some of the feedback we got. Most of that feedback, 99.x% of the feedback is always awesome. Sometimes it's fun to chat about the point X as well, or the point X minus whatever. You know, the negative stuff. So we had a bit of a chuckle about some of that. Caught up with the co-founders of Cloudflare as well. So I'd had a meeting set up to see Matthew Prince and also Michelle, who is one of his co-founders, who we've chatted with a lot online before, but it was just really cool to sit down with those guys and talk about what Cloudflare is doing, some of the things that I'm doing, Not just with have I been pwned and pwned passwords, but also report URI. So report URI is very well supported by Cloudflare. In fact, we serve huge volumes of requests through report URI and consequently through Cloudflare. And we use their infrastructure to try and make sure that if someone ships, say, a misconfigured CSP, we can actually protect our origin sites and not just get effectively DDoSed off the planet. So we had a fantastic chat, came up with some really, really neat ideas about other things that Cloudflare will hopefully be able to do in the future too. And they were just super, super receptive to all this. And I think you're going to see me talking a lot more about them in future because there's just so much awesome stuff they can do. Incidentally, at the moment, they're putting on one new edge node every day. So last week when I did my video, I said something like, oh, Cloudflare's got 122 edge nodes or something like that around the world. And then someone came back to me on Twitter and said, no, it's now like 130 or something. I was like, but just the other day, it was 120. So they're expanding really, really rapidly and a bunch of other new stuff in the pipeline too. So that was cool. Saw Cloudflare, went and saw Mozilla. As some of you know, Firefox was built in some Have I Been Pwned stuff. And I think it was about late November they announced that, where you can get an indication of whether the site you're on has been pwned before. So we had a chat about that and a whole bunch of other future potential stuff too. And I did a bit of a prezo to the Mozilla folks there. So they were really cool. I went and saw Salesforce. Man, I didn't realize how big Salesforce is. I mean, like I know it's a big organization, but I mean, they've got many massive buildings, you know, like massive skyscrapers. Just a really large organization doing things at a scale that I think maybe I don't normally think about because Salesforce is not something that I normally use day in and day out. Did another presentation for those guys, heap of awesome people there. Went to Autodesk. My knowledge of Autodesk is mostly AutoCAD. I haven't touched AutoCAD for years. I remember doing AutoCAD when I was at university like 20 plus years ago and playing with it a bit after that. But AutoCAD is pretty awesome. They do everything from like designing bridges, they have all the software to do that, through to apparently they did a lot of the design for the characters in the Avatar movie and other movies. So they build super awesome tools. I went and did a presentation to a bunch of people there. In fact, there was a guy sort of interviewing me, asking me questions, and I just had the PC there and just showed a lot of stuff on the screen. That presentation went fantastically, actually. I had a lot of fun at Autodesk. So those guys were awesome. I went and saw Uber as well. Had a great chat to a bloke at Uber about all sorts of things, inevitably including the Uber data breach / bug bounty / whatever it actually was. And that was really interesting. That's just sort of reconfirmed a bunch of thoughts that I had on the way all of that went down. But just very, very cool people. So that was five different places on Thursday, which kept me very busy then. Went home to the hotel room, very early night, ate salad, yada, yada. On Friday, so just yesterday for me now, because I am recording this on Saturday in San Fran, I went to Twitter, which was really cool because I'd chatted to Michael Coates, their CISO, a few times before online, hadn't had a chance to meet him, so I got to caught up with Michael. I got to catch up with Michael and see a whole bunch of other Twitter folks there. And with each of these companies, it was just interesting to hear what questions, well, the sun's getting bright all of a sudden. This was not in the plan when I set my lighting. There you go, that'll do. So with each of these companies, they had some really interesting questions for me around online attacks, around things I'm doing with Have I Been Pwned, and also some observations about the threats and things they see. And I want to talk about a really interesting trend in just a moment without naming which company sort of said what. But anyway, so I went to Twitter, another presentation with a bunch of people there, just a lot of folks sitting around a table asking questions and me showing cyber things, which was fun. And again, just awesome folks. There's a bunch of photos on my Twitter timeline at the moment from each of these events as well. So they were everyone was pretty eager to get selfies and pictures and things, which was cool. So did Twitter from there, I went to Facebook. And Facebook, I mean, you expect Facebook's gonna be big, right? But it is a massive campus, it is insane. So we had to drive probably 45 minutes south out of San Fran to get more down to a sort of Silicon Valley area. And you walk into this campus and it's a bit like say, Movie World on the Gold Coast, all right, which is a little bit like a Disneyland kind of theme. And apparently someone from Disney had designed the campus, and you look at sort of the buildings that are selling the food and stuff like that, because there's all sorts of restaurants and things around, and it feels a little bit like a theme park set. So that was just a massive setup. And again, sat around and spoke to a bunch of people there about security stuff, which was cool. Went and had barbecue there because they have all of these, like literally food shops. It'd be like going into a little town, and they have shops that do, you know, barbecue, and they've got gyms and whatever else. So I had epic barbecue at Facebook, which was pretty cool. I saw those guys. Went to Sequoia Capital, which is a VC firm after that, and they've invested in some really, really big names in the past. Some that come to mind include Apple, so they go back quite some way. Instagram, massive organizations. PayPal was one of the logos on the wall there as well. And, you know, they've got different challenges again because they're trying to help companies grow and stay safe as they grow and hopefully not have major security incidents. So they were cool. And then the last one I did yesterday was EA Games. And I always thought that was going to be cool because it's a game company. But just met a few really, really lovely people there, one of which I knew already from previous trips over this way. Spoke a lot, again, about the sorts of challenges that these organizations are having and the sorts of questions people had for me. Now, I want to sort of talk about this trend thing. And it was just interesting because other stuff in the industry happened about the same time. I've actually got three more meetings today, even though it's a Saturday. But I don't take off until sometime late tonight, so I had the time. So if there's anything interesting from those, I'll talk about that next week. Now, let me drink some of this. So the trend thing. The thing that I was consistently asked about people, and, you know, I'm going to make sure I sort of don't imply where these questions came from, given the sensitive nature of it. But there are a lot of people that were either personally interested in this topic or their organizations were dealing with these sorts of threats. The thing that came up very, very, very frequently effectively came back to credential stuffing and collections of password and username pairs that are distributed around the web and being resilient to online attacks. And let's sort of put this thing in context for a moment, because this is a really, really big issue. And I know I've spoken about it before, but we'll recap briefly. There are lists floating around on the internet, many, many lists of email address and password pairs that have been curated from other data breaches. All of the other stuff that's not needed for the purposes of credential stuffing stripped out, all of the birth dates and IP addresses and whatever other metadata is in there, and distilled down to very, very large collections of email addresses and passwords. Now, when I say very, very large, these can number in the billions of records. These lists are then taken and they're used to test those credentials against other services in a very, very highly automated way. And there are dedicated tools out there to help attackers do this. Tools that will help them obfuscate their IP addresses through various open proxies. Tools that will help them randomize user agent strings, change their rate. Now, modify other attributes of the request such that it's enormously impossible to tell that it's the same attacker using two different credential pairs trying to log onto the one system. Now, this is a really hard problem because what we're saying is, for those of you actually responsible for managing systems, how can you be resilient if an attacker tries to log onto your service with the legitimate credentials of one of your customers? This is very, very difficult. And there's a little bit of you that might go, well, that's really the customer's fault, isn't it? You know, like they have reused their password somewhere, which is almost certainly the root cause. Plus, it was probably a crap password, because most systems I see these days, most data breaches have some form of cryptographic protection, even if it's just MD5, which is terrible. Actually, I loaded one last night, a manga site. This is what I do when I have downtime in hotels, I load data breaches. Loaded a manga site, and it was salted MD5. Now, if you have a strong password, something generated by a password manager, that's not getting cracked, even with MD5. Not by the sorts of people that want to go and crack these data breaches. But of course, people don't. You know, a very, very small percentage of people actually use password managers or anything like that. So you're trying to be resilient to attackers coming along. And I just noticed this. Why does it get sunnier than the day I leave? This isn't fair. All right. Sorry, podcast listeners, I was starting to look very, very bright there. So, you got this problem with people coming along with these credential pairs authenticating to your system, and as much as you'd like to blame the end user, and they're certainly at fault here, we know that the vast majority of your end users are going to be doing this. So you've now got a problem, because even if they do have their accounts taken over, you've still got some sort of support responsibility, plus they're going to blame you before they blame themselves. So this becomes a hard problem. Now, to make it even worse, there was a story only about 2 weeks ago, it was just around the time I left Australia, about the FTC here in the US saying that just because a website is the victim of a credential stuffing attack doesn't absolve them of responsibility. Now, I forget the exact wording. I'm going to put this in a blog post I want to write next week. But effectively, what the FTC is saying is that companies now need to be resilient to credential stuffing. And even regardless of the FTC, you have to be, because this is what all the kids are doing these days. They're literally trying to break into your system. It's not just kids. There is a career criminal aspect to this too. They're trying to break into your system with valid credential pairs. And you've got to figure out how you're going to stop it. It's a hard problem, and there are many different things we can do to sort of start getting us down the path towards stopping it. Now, of course, one of those things is using stuff like the Pwn Passwords list, and this is part of how this came up in conversation so many times the last couple of days. Loads of companies are rolling these Pwn Passwords into their defenses as part of registration, password reset, login. So something like that list is enormously valuable. It's very hard to do that whilst you're under attack. So one of the things that happens quite a bit is I'll have someone reach out, someone from a big company. They'll reach out of the blue. This happened whilst I was in Seattle, so about a week and a half ago. Company reached out, they're in Europe. They said, look, we're victims of a credential stuffing attack. Like, it is happening right now. We're looking at our logs, we're getting hammered. There's no easy way of just rejecting all of these requests. In fact, in their case, they were finding that the customer account takeovers that were successful, they were finding that customer in have I been pwned each time. So they're saying, look, someone is using data that you have in order to try and do these account takeovers. They can't really turn around on the spot and start doing something like saying, hey, if this person is in the pwned passwords list, then just block the login. Like, that's a problem, because a whole bunch of legitimate customers are going to be there too. So it takes a bit more planning than that. There's other things that we can talk about that I'm going to put in this blog post around anti-automation and things like this. But it was just fascinating how frequently this issue came up. Now, at the same time, the National Lottery in the UK was having exactly this problem. So only about 24 hours before recording this, I put out a series of tweets, because I was getting tweets from people saying, hey, it looks like the National Lottery in the UK has been hacked. Here's their message. And you read the message and you go, well, this is actually not the National Lottery being hacked. What they're saying is that there's suspicious activity on some accounts. And as the news sort of unfolded, what appears to have happened is the National Lottery has about 10.5 million people registered on their system to literally play the lottery in the UK. And they say, and I find this a little bit hard to believe, but they say there was suspicious activity on 150 accounts. As a result of that, we have emailed all 10.5 million people and suggested that they reset their password, and that if they use it anywhere else, to be extra cautious and all this sort of thing. And there's a bit from the Register, where the Register managed to get a comment from a spokesperson at the National Lottery who said, yes, it's a credential stuffing attack. Now, the reason I find it a bit hard to believe is that if you've got 10.5 million subscribers and your system is subject to a credential stuffing attack, which has obviously been successful to some degree, I find it hard to believe that only 150 customers out of 10.5 million actually had account takeovers. That number just seems way, way too low, because we know that password reuse is absolutely massive. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I find it hard to believe that if it was only 150 people that had account takeovers, now as a proportion of 10 million, I mean, that is a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of 1%, 10.5 million. I find it hard to believe that if it was only that number, they would email all 10.5 million customers and tell them all to change passwords. Because when they do that, they're going to have to deal with not only the sudden influx of people coming to the system actually doing that, the bulk of them are not going to do it anyway. We know this. Humans are very, very bad at following security instructions. And there's going to be a heap of people that then jump onto their support queue and say, hey, have you been hacked or closed my account or what's going on, whatever else. Like, it's creating a lot of noise for them to deal with too. So I suspect there's something else going on that they haven't quite disclosed yet. It just does not seem to add up. And if it is what it is on face value, hey, we saw account takeovers due to credential stuffing on 150 accounts, let's email everyone and tell them to change their password. That is a very short-sighted approach. Now, there was a little tie-in here as well, and I'm going to make this point in the blog post. That FTC bit I mentioned, where the FTC said, look, companies may face charges if they have account takeover due to credential stuffing. In there, the piece is effectively saying, look, one of the mechanisms of defending against attacks like credential stuffing is multi-step verification, or MFA, or 2FA, or whatever you want to call it, a password and something else. You know, this is a really, really critical part of your footprint today. And the tie-in back to the National Lottery is, I've captured a tweet here somewhere where someone said, look, I've gone and changed my password. I would like to turn on 2FA to better protect my account. And the lottery said, sorry, we don't support it. However, we do take security seriously. It's like, well, they're not really mutually compatible statements, you know. And incidentally, turning on 2FA via a soft token on a smartphone is really, really easy to do. We do it on Report Your RI for everyone for free. It can be a piece of cake. But you don't turn around and do it right in the midst of an attack when you're trying to rush things through. You know, this is, again, something that takes planning. So look, we'll see how that pans out. Maybe we'll learn a little bit more about the National Lottery. I don't know. But I do want to try and take all of this stuff that I've just mentioned, the experiences from the companies I just saw, as well as the National Lottery stuff, and bundle it up into a blog post about this, including some defensive stuff. So pwn passwords is certainly one way of defending. 2FA is spoken about. I'm going to put a few other things in there too. So I'll try and get that out this coming week. I've got that and another big one I want to get out. But I'll be home. I'll be able to do it. Should be nice. So look, that's everything that's happened there. Today I'm going to see a few other companies. I know it's a Saturday, but just simply because I had the time. So I've got to go and see someone in about 20 minutes, actually. So I probably should wrap this up. Last thing is, I've got NetSparker sponsoring my blog again this week. NetSparker is one of these organizations that I have actually used for a very long time. There's a NetSparker tag on my blog, and they go all the way back to when I was in my corporate life. And the developers that I was working with would get findings from security people in really, really hard to understand terms, massive documents that made sense to security people but didn't make sense to dev people. So I started using NetSparker because the reports that it generated were things that people could actually understand. And I thought they did a really good job of articulating the security problem and also the fix. It's kind of important. You've got to have the fix. So I was using that. There was a blog post in there from me about building that into your CI pipeline as well, so that you can actually run it. We were actually running it on a daily basis if there'd been a check-in. So there'd be a check-in, and then every night at midnight or whatever it was, it would deploy to a staging environment, and then NetSparker would come along and scan it and have a report there waiting for us the next day. So that was really cool. They're a sponsor I've genuinely used for many, many, many years, and I'm very, very happy to have those guys back at the top of the site. So that is it for now. I've got to go and do my things today, jump on the plane tonight, and I'll be back in Australia Monday morning, my time. And then next week, I'll come from home, and the week after that, I'll come from home, and then after that, I'll be in Hawaii, traveling again. But hey, it's Hawaii. It's not too bad. So thanks very much for watching. Look, I hope you found the credential stuffing stuff interesting. If you have thoughts or ideas on that, or things that you'd really like me to write around it, please let me know. Leave me a comment on my blog. I don't tend to read the YouTube comments. Read the YouTube comments and you'll see why. Thanks very much for watching. I'll see you next week back home from Australia.